Welcome to the Geological Society podcast. My name's Sarah Day and I'm joined by Professor David Civita from the University of Leicester, who has just given our third shell lecture of the year, Exceptionally Preserved Fossils. So your research is about exceptionally preserved fossils. What exactly does that mean?
Well, normally the fossil record consists only of the hard parts of animals that are fossilised. Bones, in some cases, or shells, if you're dealing with marine animals. And the chances of soft tissue being preserved are pretty slim. If you died tomorrow, heaven forbid, your bones would last a lot longer than your skin. So exceptionally preserved fossils implies that the soft parts of the animal are also preserved in addition to the hard parts.
And how rare is that to find those kind of fossils?
Well,
and I guess fossils themselves are pretty rare things, even when it's
a fossil record is very good, but we have to admit that the fossil record is biased, and not all life forms actually get into the fossil record. Perhaps 15% does, something like that. And when you consider that the vast majority of marine life forms at the present time are soft-bodied, or entirely or almost entirely soft-bodied, then it tells you that the fossil record could actually be playing tricks on us. We might not get the full picture. So when you get an exceptionally preserved biota with the soft parts preserved there, it's magic because it gives us a window that we wouldn't otherwise have.
So you can have a bit more faith that you've got a representation of the entire ecosystem.
Yes, exactly. That's the goal, I think, with any exceptionally preserved biota, that you can look at the entire animal life form in its entirety and try and reconstruct either a marine ecosystem or, in some cases, a terrestrial ecosystem.
So how many of those types of fossil assemblages do we have?
I suppose if you look through the geological record, there are perhaps 15 or so really blockbuster exceptionally preserved faunas. And they're scattered from the Precambrian, the late Precambrian, for example, the Ediacaran fauna in Australia, right the way through to more recent deposits. And they're dotted all the way through the geological record. There are other exceptionally preserved fossils, but the real blockbusters where you get entire biotas preserved, you could probably say there are 15 or so.
Can you give us some examples of what kind of creatures you're finding in those sort of assemblages?
Well, it varies according to the time.
I mean, we're not talking huge animals that people imagine, you know, dinosaurs and things very small creatures.
No, some of these are largish creatures, even the invertebrates, for example, in the Chenjiang biota where we work. The invertebrates, some of them are estimated to have been a metre or more in size. When you get up into more recent deposits, you can find mammals preserved, for example, in tar pits in America. We've got mammals preserved almost in their entirety. So, yes, there is a possibility of getting both small and much larger animals captured.
Mm. And when you've got them, it seemed from your lecture that in order to really understand what they are, what they look like, you sort of have to destroy them.
Well, yeah, that's a particular part of my lecture about the Herefordshire biota of Silurian age, and we adopted that method of destruction and reconstruction simply because we couldn't grab the scions from the rock by any other means, because both the fossil and the rock in which they're contained are of the same chemical substance. So it's very difficult to grab the fossil either physically or chemically from the rock. So we came up with this idea of destroying the fossil and reconstructing it by capturing images as we destroy it and then stitching them all together using computer techniques. Now, of course, we might be able to go back to methods which we've tried and failed by using special CT computed tomography techniques, and we may do that in the near future.
So this presumably is a really revolutionary new way of looking at fossils. It's not been around for that long.
The idea of using tomography in fossils actually is an ancient discipline. Many paleontologists in the past, for example, paleontologists in the Baltic have sliced up fish and tried to imagine how they would look reconstructed. Brachiopods, the same. There are a particular group of invertebrates where people have sliced fossils to see what's inside. and then trying to reconstruct using three-dimensional techniques. But I guess what we did in Herefordshire was apply modern technology, i.e. computer techniques, to reconstructing fossils which are preserved in three dimensions with high fidelity. And we reconstruct using 20 micron slices. So, you know, there are 1,000 microns in a millimeter. And so the opportunity for capturing very fine detail is there.
So, I mean, how much detail is preserved on these kinds of fossils?
Well, we can get down to micron size hairs and other details of appendages on the Herefordshire material, and other deposits are equally well preserved. There's a famous deposit of Upper Cambrian age in the Baltic called the Austen, and there you've got micro arthropods preserved at millimeter scale or less, and these have incredibly fine detail of the anatomy preserved, again down to micron scale. So the fossil record can be incredibly truthful where cases of exceptional preservation occur.
And do we have any way of understanding why it is in these particular locations like Herefordshire, why those fossils were preserved so perfectly, and they seem to almost be in a life assemblage?
I think each exceptionally preserved biota has its own taphonomic pathway to tell. So you have to look at them case by case. The Chenjiang biota is preserved in a different way to the Herefordshire one. You asked about Herefordshire. It's still a problem as to how these animals were preserved in such fantastic detail, because they're literally frozen in time. It's as if someone had come along, taken a snapshot of them in living position, and just frozen on a photograph. And the pathway for preservation is still something that we're trying to work out. We've probably neglected it to some extent, although there is a PhD at Leicester by David Riley who's going to address some of the problems. I suppose if I'm brutal, we'd be having too much fun with the animals.
Yeah, I guess that's your interest, is the specimens themselves.
Yeah.
And why is it that it's so important to recover these fossil specimens?
Well, it addresses the bias in the fossil record, because then having the soft parts gives us a much more complete picture of the paleobiology of the animals, and therefore we can talk about the evolution of these life forms with greater certainty. And if we've got a greater number of animals from the biota being preserved, then we have the chance of reconstructing communities which are more faithful representation of the life forms at that particular snapshot in time.
Rather than just
time.
One individual fossil on its own.
Yeah. So for all these reasons, soft-bodied faunas give us a huge amount of information that we don't normally get from the hard-part fossil record.
And in a sort of wider sense, reconstructing fossils and fossil assemblages, it tells us something about the evolution of life itself, presumably.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, often we're only guessing if we have the hard parts of animals preserved, but once we've got the soft parts, the tissues, the vital organs of the animal, that enables us to assess affinities and therefore evolution of life in a much more confident way.
And do you think there's further we can go in how we can recover these fossils, more detail that we can find?
Yeah, most soft-bodied fossil biotas are actually discovered by serendipity, by chance finding, and undoubtedly many new important soft-bodied faunas have come on stream in the last two decades, and I'm sure that several important ones will come on stream in the future.
Well, you're about to give the talk again. We can already hear your next audience arriving. Just lastly, before I go, one question from Twitter, which we've just received on the Shell Lecture hashtag. Can you see ancient CO2 gas levels by studying fossils from 500 million years ago, or I guess from studying any fossils?
I haven't personally done that, and I don't think you can do it from the fossil faunas that I've studied.
So we're not preserving the atmosphere and we're preserving the creatures themselves more than that. Yeah. Well, I hope that answers that question. David, thank you very much for talking to me, and good luck with the next talk.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for listening.
Thank you.